It's the tip of the spear in the epic battle to defend the United States of America. The National Security Hour exposes the wolves in sheep's clothing and their nefarious plots to undermine and destroy U.S. national security.
Welcome back to the National Security Hour on America Out Loud. .news, AmericaOutLoud.news, where you come to hear military and intel experts. Today, we're going to do a little bit something different. Your hosts today, Colonel Mike and Dr. Mike, have a panel. So what we're going to do today, we're going to do a little bit something different. We're going to have one of our team members on the National Security Hour with us, intel expert Ed Hoagland. And we brought in another expert from Europe, Dr. Michael Krupa, who is an author also. So he'll be joining us on the panel today, live from Poland. And this is going to be a special treat for you guys on the National Security Hour and AmericaOutLoud.news. So before we do a panel, let me just do the intro here. The National Security Hour on America Out Loud Talk Radio Network plays on the iHeartRadio. It's the voice of freedom, the out loud truth. This is where you come to hear military and intel experts. As you know, we're on every week, 8 p.m. Monday, 8 p.m. Monday every week. Ed Hoagland's show is on Tuesday, 8 p.m. He follows us, and then there's three other shows on the network to finish out the week. So it's five shows a week on the National Security Hour. America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on the iHeartRadio network. You can also hear us and listen to us on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best in-class apps, Apple, Android, Alexa, and that's AAA, and we stream 24/7. Now, you can also hear them on the podcast on the same apps. All of our shows, all of the shows on the network, they go to podcast typically 1 or 2 days after the broadcast is heard live on Talk Radio. You can hear them on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, and many more. Be sure to subscribe and rate the show on Apple for us. And we mean that because that's where we get statistics, okay? Everybody else is chintzy. Be sure to make AmericaOutLoud.news your daily stop for latest news and happenings. Why? Because there's a brand new website. There's a lot of new shows. There are a lot of good articles. There's a lot of videos. I mean, this is one-stop shopping. From morning to night, you can just check in, AmericaOutLoud.news, and there you go. All right? You can find out more about our show and get all the latest podcasts if you go to the menu nav at AmericaOutLoud.news under our show or schedule, and you will be in the know. Hey, don't forget. Yesterday, Sunday, you want to tune in at 10 o'clock, right? Viewpoint with Malcolm, kick-ass show, replays at 6 p.m. Call grandma, auntie, whoever it is that's still, you know, listening to Beat the Meat and Snuffleupagus on the weekend and say, hey, mom, guess what? It's 2024. You got to check the show out, you know, and you could stop listening to all of our congressmen in the Union Party who love going on the liberal shows and telling you how great they are. All right, with that, let me introduce our guest, Ed Hoagland. We have Dr. Michael Scheuer and Dr. Michael Krupa. So, Ed, we have a few things we want to speak about today. So let's start it up. Where would you like to go, and who should do? Why don't you just have the first question and put it out there?
Okay. Fantastic, Colonel Mike. Hey, welcome to the three mics. It's a first. Yeah. It's a first. So one of the key questions that I like to ponder here as we're talking about these world events is, who is responsible for the Ukraine war here, right? Who's really responsible for the Ukraine war? There's centuries-long history here that a lot of people don't know about related to Poland, Lithuania, Russia, the Ukraine. But has become in the last decade here for this recent two incursions in Russia. Who the heck's really responsible? That's my question back to you, gentlemen.
So who would like to take that question first? Would that be Dr. Mike or Dr. Krupa?
I would take it. It's been the United States and its allies. They've not listened to the enemy, and they're paying the price now. He warned us repeatedly. Putin did that the Crimea will not be given up. He took it, and they stood there like nitwits because they hadn't listened. And then they moved up closer to the border. They built weapons in there. Or chemical labs in there, chemical weapons labs. They overthrew a sitting Ukrainian government, and now we're in the fix we're in. And we've wasted I don't know, $200 billion there? I don't know how much. We'll never know how much because they've hidden what they've sent. But this government has been, and starting with Trump, he gave them weapons. There's no point. There's no interest of the United States in Ukraine. Never has been until this business started with Victoria Nuland in 2013 or whenever it was they overthrew that guy. Who cares?
Let's go to Dr. Michael Krupa on this. Dr. Michael Krupa, what do you say?
Well, I can only use the words of the famous American election campaign ad. I'm Mike Krupa, and I support this message of what Dr. Scheuer just said fully. I'll just add from my vantage point that, one of the parting shots of the ideological sort of godmother of the current turbulence in Ukraine, one Victoria Nuland, who has landed a nice stint at the Columbia University, thanks to her friend Hillary Clinton recently. I think in one of her last interviews with Christiane Amanpour on CNN, she mentioned that, basically succumbing to the fact that her crusade to, bring Ukraine to the camp of the collective West failed. But she added an interesting caveat there because she said, and I quote, this is not the Russia we wanted. We wanted a more European-oriented Russia, basically a Russia in our image. So that pretty much tells you that this entire operation, we could call it, Operation Ukraine, from the beginning, at least since 2004, when we had the first, the so-called Orange Revolution, the first attempt to conduct the color revolution by way of so-called democracy promotion in Ukraine, that the Washington establishment, especially its neoconservative component, was hell-bent on using Ukraine to basically conduct a similar color revolution in Moscow, abolishing Putin and going back to the good old days of the 90s when you had an incompetent Russian president, thereby also leading to the destruction of Russia as a sovereign nation state. So everything that Dr. Scheuer said, that it is the West's fault, I completely agree with that. And I also would like to point to a very prescient essay that was written by Professor John Mearsheimer in the wake of the overthrow of the Ukrainian government in 2014, I think it was published in Foreign Affairs, entitled Why the West is Responsible for the Ukraine Crisis. So in that sense, I just like to add those words of Victoria Nuland, which testify to the fact why we have the situation in Ukraine that we have currently.
I'll add $5 billion to that and go to Ed Hoagland. Ed, what's your opinion?
So I agree with some aspects what the two doctors are saying here. But as you know, I try to focus a lot on cognitive warfare. And so I look back at this a little bit more strategically from my perspective. And the two gentlemen are all no doubt looking at this strategically as well. But I'd like to get their input on this. So I am somewhat of a conspiracy theorist at times because it's proven more right than wrong, especially in the last decade or so with Obama, the Clintons, and the Bidens here. So what was it, do you think, that this could have been pre-planned quite some time ago? Because if you remember, President Obama said before he was reelected to the Russian President Medvedev, I'll have more flexibility after the election. Okay. Then you had Russia's first invasion of the Ukraine happen. Now you fast forward, and when Biden got in office, what did he say? He said, well, we wouldn't mind a minor incursion. So both of these statements basically gave the green light for activities like that. Now, where I disagree is, I'm not sure putting the NATO stuff like that pushed Putin. I think he had already had in his mind he wanted to do certain things, and he knew based on the weakness of NATO, he knew based on, as I was saying, his allies like Obama and Biden, that he wasn't going to get the pushback that he expected. Because you remember the first thing that Biden also did when Ukraine invaded the second time was offer Zelensky a plane right out. So I think there's some truth to what the gentlemen are saying here, but I'm a little bit more of a conspiracy aspect here. And I think this is a broader game here at play. What's your thought?
Go ahead, Dr. Mike.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's for my money, that's a stretch. I think what Putin learned during his growing up, if you would, as the president of Russia, and before that as an intelligence officer, was that NATO has been for most of its existence a non-entity. They were never going to resist the Russians to the point where they would have victory, The only thing NATO was ever good for was to shield French, British, and American nuclear weapons. Otherwise, NATO has been just a complete waste of time. We saw them field armies that were lousy in Afghanistan. A few of them went to Turkey or to Iraq. Except for the British, the Canadians, and the Australians, we may as well not have an enemy, an ally. And we're now in the midst of paying to maintain democracy in Europe when all of the European governments are systematically installing authoritarianism, except for Poland, really, authoritarianism in their country, discriminating against the native citizens and bringing in people who will never assimilate, don't want to assimilate, and want to be supreme. So the idea that NATO, I think really we really were stupid enough in Biden and probably in Trump to believe that we were the leader of the free world. They didn't even bother to take a look at what politically was going on in Europe. It's an astounding thing, but NATO is a kind of the pale shadow of a former nothing.
All right, so I'm going to put in on that one. I agree with Mike with the French because they're even getting their ass kicked right now. They're being thrown out of Africa. So, I mean, in the end, we're going to have just French fries and champagne. So I want to go to Dr. Krupa with this one. Dr. Krupa, in response to Ed Hoagland, with the response of what's happening with Putin. And I'll add to that also, there is another democracy, I think, in Europe. And I think you'll agree, Dr. Krupa, that it's Hungary. Am I right or wrong?
Well, yes, Hungary is definitely a democracy, at least in the sense of being a national democracy, because Orban is defending the national interest. And similar things are happening, thankfully, just across the fence, so to say, from Poland and Slovakia, where recently we had the election of the government of Robert Fico, plus a fairly realist-looking president a week ago, one Robert Pellegrini, if I'm not mistaken. And these two gentlemen have stated that Slovakia will not be used as a battering ram, as a staging ground to foment chaos in Russia via proxy. And Fico and Orban are moving away from this crazed NATO policy of, as Lloyd Austin said, strategically weakening Russia, because that'll lead directly to nuclear war. It's a waste of money and a waste of military prowess. But I'd like to go back to what Ed said in the beginning as to Putin's perspective on NATO. The thing is, I would agree that Putin knows that NATO is a laughingstock. I mean, after 1989, you know, it was one American senator, I forgot his last name, who said if, you know, NATO can go out of area or out of business, basically. And I think we all agree here that NATO should have gone out of business. But what happened was it's one thing to cooperate with NATO, as we had with the so-called NATO-Russia Council, and acknowledge the fact that NATO exists. But it's another thing to bring NATO infrastructure, NATO missiles to Ukraine, where, you know, you have 5 minutes warning if a missile is launched to hit, for example, Moscow. I mean, the Russians cannot tolerate that, just as the United States, rightly so, could not tolerate, you know, Soviet missiles in Cuba, or, for example, the building of Russian or Chinese bases, excuse me, in Mexico or in Canada, for that matter. Spheres of influence of great powers do matter still, despite all the happy talk of some international theorists that, you know, we've moved away from spheres of influence and power politics. That's just complete nonsense. So in reference to what Ed said about Obama's words that, you know, I'll have more leeway after the election, those are words spoken, I think, in 2012 to Medvedev. From what I know, the historical record shows that he was referring specifically to a new arms limitations treaty that the Russians were very adamant on implementing. We know we had New START in 2010 signed between Obama and Medvedev, but then there was no follow-on in terms of missile defense, which it turns out Obama basically screwed the Russians, pardon my French, where he promised them that he would go back to this issue once he was elected, but then he wasn't willing to go back to the issue of missile defense, which basically prompted Russian anxiety over what the hell the Americans were actually planning to do via NATO and its proxies in Eastern Europe. I would also like to remind everyone that, you know, despite all our criticism of Obama, he had a moment of enlightenment when I think it was in 2015 after the whole crisis in Ukraine began, where he said, we cannot be sending weapons to the Ukrainians directly because that would give them a false impression that they could take on the Russians. So those were very sensible words on the part of Barack Obama. And let's remember, from what I can recall, he actually, despite, you know, all the CIA assets in Ukraine. Obama did not, in fact, send weapons to Ukraine. He sent them everything but weapons. That was only followed on later by, unfortunately, by President Trump. And then what happened with Biden, everyone, you know, were witness to that. So I think I would agree Putin knew NATO is a paper tiger. However, he could absolutely in no way tolerate, as a Russian head of state, the existence of NATO infrastructure so close to Russia's borders, including the potential of deploying nuclear weapons in Ukraine. That was a complete red line for any Russian president, not only Vladimir Putin.
All righty. So here we go. We're coming down in the last couple of seconds here, and we're going to go to commercial. But let me add this. I always thought when he was speaking to Putin about, you know, he'd have better leeway. I thought he was talking about DEI in the military, you know, lipstick, high heels, dyed hair, stuff like that. Turn the military into a gay party. So, you know, I was off by a way more than all of you guys. Okay. I always thought it was just dismantling our military. So that also with regards to Russia, that Putin had to stand strong, I think, to all three of you. Had he not, the communists probably would have knocked him out, took him out, whatever. So we're coming down. Ed, if you could do this in 2 minutes before we go to commercial, go ahead.
It's just really quickly. So I think a lot of this goes back to our failure when we declared we won the Cold War. The day that we said we won the Cold War, we lost the Cold War. Because instead of following up on that victory in a cognitive aspect and then working with Russia and the other country to make them move from a black market economy to more of a capitalist economy. The corruption in Ukraine, the corruption in Russia, all those aspects allowed guys like Putin to come in and then push things. Now, where I disagree with the gents here is, you know, I think this stuff about NATO on the edge of Russia, stuff like that, that's all BS, because NATO was never going to invade Russia. NATO's never invaded Russia and never intended to. And so that has always been a false flag. So that's just my thought before we go to break here, Colonel Mike.
All right. So the last minute before we go to commercial, I think this was a good round. The first round was a good round. I think everybody's made a point, but the bottom line is Russia is Russia. They have the nukes. But I always ask the question, and maybe we could discuss this in the next segment. Why did we treat China, communist China, the way we did since Clinton? Since Bush Sr., and we didn't give that pass to open up the economics for Russia. All right, so we're going to go to commercial break. Don't forget to visit the sponsors, and we'll see you on the other side.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms. But left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
In 2008, people could spend an average of 12 seconds on a task without becoming distracted. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds. The digital age is narrowing our attention span. Trouble concentrating or recalling information is frustrating, embarrassing, and kills productivity. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created Focus and Recall to boost your brain power. And unlike other supplements that don't work, Focus and Recall is not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients to help you immediately sharpen focus, concentrate longer, and strengthen recall. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top, shoot it down. Thousands of 5-star reviews proves it works. Supercharge your brain and see the difference. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
Welcome back to the National Security Hour on AmericaOutLoud.news. AmericaOutLoud.news, where you come to hear military and intel experts. Today we're doing a panel. We have Ed Hoagland, Dr. Michael Scheuer, co-host, Colonel Mike, and we brought in Dr. Mike Krupa. So that's three Mikes and an Ed. Imagine that. And Dr. Mike Krupa is live in Poland right now. It's a little bit past 8 p.m. our time on Monday. So we thank him for staying awake. Ed, why don't you pose the next what you like to speak about with it, in regards to Europe, Ukraine, Russia, China, whatever.
No. Okay, great. Thanks, Colonel Mike. So, you know, as we left, you were talking about, you know, why did we not give the same chance to Russia that we gave to China?
Yes.
We not engage in that? And I think that was a strategic failure. And so the question, I guess, to both Dr. Krupa and Dr. Scheuer and yourself is why is it the United States continually fails to have a strategic perspective and strategic objectives that we define what we want for the future of the world and then implement that? You know, we see China does that, we see Russia does that, but we sort of, you know, play tiddlywinks in a very myopic view. And what do we get? We get reaction to our adversaries or other situations. But when is it we're going to start actually defining what we want for the future of the world in the benefit aspects and drive towards that? Because as you said, Colonel Mike, we should have had the same type of relationship with Russia economically, because it was a no-brainer at the time.
Mm-hmm. And I think the Russians were a little bit more in a position to do it than, you know, China was already building. And they might, you know, if you were Russian looking out saying, hey, why are they doing this for the Chinese? These guys are still communists. We're claiming that we're what we are. OK, so let's do this. Let's go to Dr. Mike and let's get your point of view, Dr. Mike.
I would say I can just define it by avaricionists on the part of the Americans. You know, we not only, saw the Russians go down and celebrated on it, but we also allowed Wall Street to pillage and rape the country, which is a scar on the Russian psyche, if you will, that will probably last a long time, and also on Putin's. But we saw we could not do that kind of thing on the Chinese. It's too big, too many people, too powerful at times. But we did see money. That's what American foreign policy is about. Two things: the inability to mind our own business and the willingness to take extreme risks with the security of the country in order to make money for the people who run the government.
Okay, Dr. Mike Krupa?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think one of the major differences between China and Russia in the perspective of the Washington elite in the 90s was, whereas you can go into Russia, you know, rig the elections, of which Time magazine boasted in 1996 about basically how we reelected Yeltsin back in office. You know, it was all out there. It's no secret. It was easier to rape and pillage Russia than rape and pillage China. The Chinese wouldn't have put up with it. So the oligarchs from Wall Street basically said, it's better to make money with China, better to bring them into the WTO. And remember, you had voices. I mean, I even observed them, you know, back in the day when I was much younger than I am right now in the 90s, but still cognizant of the fact that there is such, you know, a thing as geopolitics and foreign affairs in other countries. You had voices in the wilderness like, you know, Pat Buchanan in the 90s warning.
Thank you. That was a very good call. Thank you, Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah, basically warning the American people that, you know, you're selling out your industry, you're shipping all your factories to Mexico and China. One day it's going to come back to bite you in the ass, so to say. And it did. I mean, under George W. Bush, you had, as Ross Perot used to say, you know, you hear that huge hissing sound, right? First, he referred to NAFTA, obviously. But then in the early 2000s, I mean, that's when the acceleration towards a deindustrialized and a financialized economy really began. And then you had, you know, the whole shebang in 2008 with the crisis, which partially was a result of what happened earlier. But I think in general, there's an atrophy in strategic thinking in the United States. I think the last great American strategist was possibly George Kennan. You know, God bless his memory, who died in 2002. I mean, there was a real strategic mind, you know, the author of Containment, but at the same time, a person who in the early 2000s in 99 and 98 warned of the stupidity of NATO expansion. I know from Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, Colin Powell's former chief of staff, that him and Kennan had deep discussions about this at the State Department in 2001, 2002, where Kennan actually, you know, warned the administration of not not expanding further after the first round
Mike,
expansion.
Mike, your connection is going in and out.
Okay.
Can you take a look at, okay, there you go. Go ahead.
I'm good now?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. Maybe it's the CIA interfering. Who knows? So I was just saying that, you know, you had an atrophy of American strategic thinking, where one of the last strategic thinkers in the United States, in my humble opinion, was George Kennan, who warned against, you know, the dangers of NATO expansion. So if you combine that with the thinking that the United States is immune to the laws of history, to the laws of geopolitics, that everyone else in the world is just going to sit and take it, and that you can build this American singularity and American hegemony, that can happen for a time, as Paul Wolfowitz envisioned in his famous 1992 document in defense planning guidance, right? Where he basically said, we're going to create this entire sphere under our control and we cannot allow a pure competitor to rise. Well, guess what, Paul Wolfowitz? You not only allowed a competitor to rise, but you allowed two competitors to rise, and possibly three now in the Middle East with Iran. So, yep, I agree with Dr. Scheuer. And I think it was just, you know, a total atrophy of American strategic thinking. And if you want to survive as a great power, dear friends, you definitely need to work on that strategic thinking in Washington, and not only.
Let's go back to Ed Hoagland. Go ahead, Ed.
I agree on the strategic thinking part, most definitely. I think we're sort of like the Keystone Cops. We don't think more than 2 months ahead of ourselves. And as you rightly point out, we get quite full of hubris. Where I'll disagree, though, is, you know, we weren't the ones who raped and pillaged Russia. It's been Russia's dictatorial and tyrannical leadership over the generations that has done that to themselves. When Dr. Mike brought up a good point in the first segment about Putin and, you know, his background in the KGB, you know, he does what he's used to. He works in areas that he's used to. But one thing that I don't think people understand, because of that, there's just no way in heck Ukraine's going to get back the territory they currently have. And so with Dr. Scheuer and others here, I think continuing this war is futile at this point. It has been futile from the beginning. They should have moved toward a quick stalemate and peace and then try to work things from there. Because as long as Putin's alive, in my opinion, as long as he's alive, you're not going to move past this. And if you continue to proceed with this war here, okay, because these folks are stuck on kinetics. They're stuck on kinetic solutions. And this is not a kinetic solution. This is a cognitive solution that's required here. This requires some adults in the room. And unlike what you've seen in the NAS Security Council Situation Room this last weekend, that's not the set of adults you want to help fix this aspect. So I'd like to ask the good doctors and Colonel Mike here, but, you know, how do you see this war ending here, for at least stalemate for right now? And do you agree or disagree that we need to bring this to a closure?
My quick answer, Ed, would be we can't do nothing until this administration is gone. Dr. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, I think we should have never started it, really. But it's either going to Ukraine will either collapse, the government or what's left of it, or the Russians will continue to take the whole of Ukraine and then probably back out until they just have what they wanted. But I mean, Putin is much less a communist than he is a czarist. And he really looks at the situation, I believe, through the eyes of the czars of the late 19th and early 20th century. He also happens to be the only adult in the room. You know, you look at Britain, you look at France, the United States, Canada, Belgium, all of the old European countries, not the ones that necessarily, and I was wrong earlier, that emerged after the Soviet Union dissolved. But all of the old countries are just crippled, self-hating organizations.
Oh, so, yeah, they elected a lot of these guys in Europe now that have laws against hate. You know, you can hate whites, but you can't hate other people. And they have prime ministers that come from South Asia. You know, I mean, it's just when you look at Europe today, Ed, it's not the Europe we grew up with. Let's put it that way. And Mike Krupa will agree. You know, what do you have there? You have Poland, you have Czechoslovakia, you have Slovenia, you have Hungary. You know, when you look at the Anglo countries, they lost their mind. I mean, right or wrong, Dr. Krupa, what do you say?
I completely agree. I think the West has gone bonkers. I mean, the latest iteration of this insanity is the latest bill that has just passed the German parliament, whereby you can change your gender once a year. So one year you're a girl, one year you're a guy, third year you're whatever. So, I mean, if that's not the testimony, the ultimate testimony of the death of the West as a civilization, as an entity that means anything, instead of committing collective suicide, then I don't know what does. In terms of the war that needs to end, of course, this war needs to end as quickly as possible. You know, as a Pole, I can say that I'm ashamed for my government and the last government before that. They were active participants in this proxy war against Russia. I think it's stupid. I think the last thing that Poland needs is an influx of millions upon millions of Ukrainian refugees and so-called migrants, as well as a potential war situation with the Russian Federation, which we in no way in hell can win, even with the full backing of NATO, which in and of itself cannot win a war with Russia. But I think the terms are going to be set by Russia. I think we're way past the moment of negotiation. Let's not forget, Zelensky's term ends on May 21st. After May 21st, he will be an illegitimate president. And Putin will absolutely have no motive to negotiate with him. And the reason for that is obviously because Zelensky, being the Churchill of our time and the head of the world's greatest democracy, apparently did not hold elections. How about that? So what I predict, I think the only question is now, how far west will the Russians go across the Dnieper River? But at the end of the day, we're going to see a Tokyo Bay Redux, basically 2024. The Russians are going to be dictating unconditional surrender, and that in part is due to the fact that the deal that was on the table in April 2022 that was sabotaged by Boris Johnson, probably at the behest of Anthony Blinken and Joe Biden, was the best deal Ukraine could have gotten. And a lot of Ukrainian politicians, by the way, now are saying that the terms were pretty good, we should have taken it, but now it's too late for that. So Putin is the
one
that's going to be dictating.
Before I go to Ed, I just want to say one thing. I'm kind of in agreement with the German Republic, because if I could have a BMW turn into a Mercedes one year and into an Audi the next year, that's the kind of law I like. Go ahead, Ed Hoagland.
Yeah, so this is where, when I think about this, I think about my definition of cognitive war, where they use ideology, religion, or issues to drive subjugation of different countries. And so what I'm seeing here across Europe, okay, and here in the United States as well, is what you were talking about, Colonel Mike. Every one of these countries has sort of given up things where you can change transgenders and sexes, all these other stuff. They bring in masses of these other illegals and stuff like that to basically culturally override their country. And that's exactly what's happening here in the United States. So from my perspective, this is not just some happenstance event, set of events. This is pre-planned and sequenced to some degree. How much? Well, you can vary. You know, people talk about globalists and other stuff. But I think part of this is the aspect. So let me change the topic just a little bit, because, you know, I agree with where Dr. Krupa was talking about Russia and Ukraine. And so we're going to have to figure out how we can extricate ourselves from that orifice. OK, but China is right now continuing to support Russia and what they're doing. And I think China is playing Putin and Russia quite well overall, contrary to what many people may think. But I'd like to ask the group first, as we switch over to China's, why is China supporting Russia so much right now? What's their interest here?
Dr. Mike has the answer. I know that. Dr. Mike, go ahead.
they're useful against us, but they're also trying to get the Chinese to invest in the frozen west of Russia, in hydroelectric power, in manufacturing plants. It's a very much a money operation, and I don't think that there's any real love between the two of the countries. You looked in Afghanistan, and the Chinese hated the Afghans, but they were willing to give them guns because we were paying for them. But the idea that the Chinese and the Russians forever enemies are ever going to be not that, in a more than tactical sense, I think, is a red flag that we wave to get Americans scared and line up behind idiot foreign policy.
Well, I think they don't want to lose any satellites to China, Mike. That's my opinion anyway.
Well, the Belt and Road Initiative is going to die in Afghanistan. They will learn what they apparently cannot read for themselves, that no one's going to win there and no one's going to stay there if the Afghans don't want them to, even if they're the mighty Chinese. So I'm a little less concerned on the economic side than the political side and probably the military side at the moment. But, you know, the people that the Chinese deal with are going to learn what the Chinese are like. The Africans learned everyone will learn. They suck the country dry, and then there's nothing left from a very low starting point in the economies. China's an enemy? Yeah, it is, because we have the southern border open, because we've let all of their people come in and organize organizations which are very suborned by the CCP. And they're a terrible enemy inside the United States. Outside the United States, they probably are getting to be a much worse enemy because we faggotized our military.
All right, let me go back to Ed for the last couple of minutes, because we only got a couple of minutes before we go to the last segment and then break time. Ed, as a former national security man, as an IC guy, I mean, isn't this a dream for China to have the open border? Isn't this a dream for any country that doesn't like America or the policies or supporting the fact that we support Israel? I mean, isn't this a dream for everybody coming across the border? Would this have happened? Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not only a dream for the Chinese, because they've sent about 70,000 of their military-age men across their border. But going back to what Dr. Scheuer talked about, you know, with Putin, all right, there's never been a love lost between the two countries. But from Xi's standpoint, he needs land, he needs space, he needs minerals, okay? And he knows Putin's going to eventually die. And China takes a strategic view here. The U.S. doesn't. So if Putin dies and there's not a great successor, or even if there's a great successor, China's in a position to basically rape Russia and take a lot of their nukes, take a lot of their land with the fans and such, and move things there. And here in the United States, if you got 70,000 insurgents spread across the U.S., you don't have to worry about cyber hacking. They can do whatever they want to destroy infrastructure and cause chaos and other things. Because remember, in China's unrestricted warfare, it's not the kinetic that counts. It's the irregular warfare and other aspects of warfare they can use to undermine our society. And Americans have a lot to fear from that aspect. Back to you, sir.
Well, I agree. I agree with that. But I will just add this. They're buying a lot of land here. They're doing a lot with farming. They're buying a lot of companies. So if anything, they'd like to see us dead. They won't destroy the country, but they'd like to see more Americans dead. And this way they can just put this into their, let's say, portfolio of countries that they conquered, let's say. As long as we have useful idiots on Capitol Hill, in the judicial system, in the Supreme Court, okay, anywhere, in the state and local courts. Look what they're doing to Trump. I mean, they've never done this to any president in history, and the world is laughing at us. So we're going to go down to commercial time. Here we go. And visit the sponsors, and we'll see you on the other side. Great conversation today.
When God, through his grace and mercy, gave us free will, the will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutloud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
The Wellness Company shares your values and fights for medical freedom. They put patients before profits and follow medical science, not political science like doctors on the left. Their chief medical board, which includes Dr. Peter McCullough, are the makers of the incredible American-made high-quality spike formula. If you worry about spike proteins, go to twc.health and use promo code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount. Once again, that's twc.health, promo code OUTLOUD.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day.
Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
Welcome back. You're on the National Security Hour. Dr. Mike, Colonel Mike, your host today. And our team member, who's on Tuesday, 8 p.m., Ed Hoagland. He has a great show. He follows us on Tuesday. We start on Monday, 8 p.m. And then we have a guest today with us from Europe, Dr. Michael Krupa, a friend of the Two Mikes. Hey, don't forget, you can go to twomikes.us, twomikes.us. Going to put a plug in there since we're talking about Putin, rootin' tootin' Putin and China and all this other stuff. Go see our sponsor, EMP Shield, now more than ever. You never know what's going to happen. Today, it's a crazy world out there. But so far, it's been a great conversation with all these special, Intel expert Ed and Dr. Mike and Mike Krupa. So let's go. This is the final segment, gentlemen. Ed, why don't you open up? What would you like to open up with on the final segment?
Oh, so Taiwan and China. So it'd be great to get you guys' perspectives on this. So my perspective is, we get so focused on the kinetic solutions, okay, that we forego any chance of actually pulling our head of our rear orifice and using our brains. And what I see China doing with relation to Taiwan is a huge head fake. As Dr. Mike, you and others have pointed out, with their invasion here in the United States, why would they need to invade Taiwan? So let me start with that question. Sure. Is China going to attack Taiwan? What's you guys' perspective?
All right, we're going to bring that. Let's go to reverse now. This time on the final segment, we'll go to Dr. Michael Krupa first. Go ahead, Dr. Mike.
Well, I don't think China is going to invade Taiwan unless the United States does a Ukraine in Taiwan, so to say. And I would agree that in relation to China, the problems in the United States are actually more internal. As a matter of fact, I recall that before the last election in 2020, there was an analysis. I think it was actually, there was a briefing on it on Revolver News, which is run by Darren Beatty. You might recall the former speechwriter for President Trump, where one Chinese thinker, I forgot if he was a professor or some sort of analyst, he diagnosed basically, you know, the internal problems that the United States faces, where he talked about the collapse of the family, the collapse of the culture, the invasion of wokeness, things that were very prescient. It was almost as if you were reading, as you know, I'd like to recall him many a times because he's such a personal hero of mine, you know, a diagnosis from that great culture warrior, Pat Buchanan. But it was so prescient and so detail-oriented that I get the impression sometimes that China knows a hell of a lot more about the internal turbulence in the United States than most Americans, which only testifies to their intelligence, whether we like them or not. But I think the crisis right now at the southern border is the crucial one, right? I mean, nobody knows who's getting in. Nobody knows who's setting up terrorist shop, who's setting up intelligence operations, and so on. I mean, that is such a vast crisis of proportions unseen in the history of the United States. And I don't think unseen since, you know, the barbarian invasions of the Roman Empire. And I think until the United States gets that situation under control, any talk of it being a serious entity on the world stage, with the exception of nukes and its latent economic power, is just going to dwindle down, because you can't have open borders, because you're not going to have a country soon. And if anybody is going to take, you know, advantage of that, could be China, could be, you know, Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, whoever, that is the premier national security issue for the United States, not Ukraine, not Taiwan, not Israel for sure, not things happening in South America. It's the southern border, and that has to be taken care of first and foremost.
All right, let's go to Dr. Mike.
Yeah, Dr. Krupa is just brilliant on that particular issue. In my own little world, I wrote that in 2016 in a book that it was pointless to go to Afghanistan or anywhere else to fight the Muslim Islamists, the Sunni Islamists at the time, if you weren't going to close the border. If you're not going to close the border and control it, then don't go overseas, because it's just a farce. But we did exactly what Bin Laden and his people wanted us to do. It was too hard to attack us in this country. Get them on our own ground, and that's what happened. We wasted 20 years and how many billions and billions of dollars, maybe trillions. We are entirely without a leadership or intellectual class in this country. They're all liars. They're all suborned, whether it's by the Israelis or the Chinese or the Russians. We're entirely a country without a head. We have arms and legs and the rest.
We have a make-believe Congress, Mike.
Yeah.
We have a make-believe Congress. They watch, they're on TV, they're negotiating budgets, they're negotiating this, that, and the other thing, and they just, go behind closed doors, and they have the nerve to say they need a spring break, and the border's wide open. They can't even impeach this guy Mayorkas, who, by the way, may have not even taken an oath.
No.
To be in his office. Now, that we don't have the proof yet, but it's been out there for a while that he might and many others might not have taken an oath. So these people are running as frauds, running the country. And why is it? And I'm going to go to Ed with this one. Why is it, Ed, that Congress cannot impeach this man? They walk away and even Ray, just the other day, it's like, hey, guys, you're bothering me. I got to get to lunch. Well, Ed, what do you think about that?
Yeah, this blows my mind, is that I don't care what political side of the aisle you're on, but whether he took the oath or not, let's say he took the oath, under U.S. Code Title 18, he's abrogated his oath of office, just as the president has. And I call him the Manchurian president. And so these guys here purposely, as Dr. Scheuer and Dr. Krupa pointed, purposely ignoring our laws and actually enabling the breaking of those laws to let these masses of people come on into our country here. And it's just, to me, it's treason. It's high treason. And for Congress not to have the kahunas to put this forward, they need to push this forward and then hold everyone who doesn't follow through in putting this man on trial to impeach him and actually impeach him, need to hold him to account. Because this is where the country goes from freedom to subjugation, freedom to tyranny in a heartbeat here. Now, Dr. Krupa mentioned, the wokeness, the family, and the culture. Because this has been going on for six decades plus. This is part of the cognitive war. And our adversaries understand it, and they've aided it and abetted in it. And now you have a radical left in America, like you have the radical left taking over all of Europe, for the most part, what used to be free European countries. And doing the same thing. This is by design, from my perspective. This is not just happenstance, but this is by design. And now the open borders was just the fruit on the cake. Back to you, sir.
I would say, specifically on the question of Taiwan, the commies and China are a lot of things, but they always seem to me to have a lot of common sense. Half of the people in Taiwan already want to return to greater China. What concern of that is ours, except we have let our chip people disintegrate in this country. And now, as I understand it, Taiwan is the major producer of computer chips in the world. So all the Chinese have to do is wait. Taiwan is falling in their direction. It would be crazy to incur the wrath of American nuclear weapons. We certainly can't scare them very much with our military. Our great army of the Indo-Pacific consists of about 104,000 soldiers, and about two-thirds of those are not shooters. So what are they going to be afraid of? The Navy? Probably with good, to some extent, yes. But I mean,
no, I think, Mike, I just think they're doing theatrics, really. Yeah. They don't want to invade Philippines, and I don't think they're going to invade Taiwan, because there's a, like you say, there's a contingent of people who want to return, to one China. Okay. And it'd be crazy to attack it and make a mess. You know, they want things intact. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, the communist and the Chinese strategy, like Ed says, it's long-term vision. Well, I think 5-year plan. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think you're right, Colonel. And I think the stupidity lies in us. Why have we been there for so long?
Well, because we need a place to park all our troops and all our bases. I think you and Ed will agree on this. How do we bring all of these people home from everywhere around the world? How many bases we have, I don't remember now.
The easiest but thing where in you the world.
Where are they going to work, Mike? Dunkin' Donuts? Where are they going to work?
Well, if we bring, you know, we can force businesses to come home from China, too. And if they don't want to come, then we
No, you're not going to force businesses because the corporations in America are partners for years in China. They took the jobs away. Ed, would you agree they're not coming back?
Well, I agree with Dr. Shorey on this one. I think we need to force them to come back. We need to completely decouple from China.
Yeah. And if they come back, the jobs come back.
Yeah, and we need to start. What my solution for China would be is, yeah, we need a one China policy, but we need a one free China policy. We need to take a strategic perspective. Every communist nation, okay, has never been communist. It's all been used as a utopian glue to then justify their subjugation. China will surely fall, just like the Soviet Union surely fell. Okay, it's a matter of time, but unless we facilitate that. Okay, by a strategic communication and proper engagement, not kinetics, not wars, okay, but and other routes, okay, then China will win this cognitive war and we'll be sitting here speaking Chinese and dealing out yen.
Well, go ahead, Mike.
That's exactly correct. And I think without our help, without Gingrich, and as the Colonel says, the WTO, entry and all the rest of the stuff we've done to help them, they would have been gone already. There might have been a horrendous war and slaughter in China, but that's their business, not ours. But they would not be where they are today without our foolishness.
Thank you for reminding the audience, Mike. Thank you for reminding the audience. The great Newt Gingrich that you see all the time on Fox and Newsmax, he signed off on the World Trade Agreement for China, WTO, let them come in. And I remember the battles. I was on the Hill at the time. I saw the real conservatives battling. But Newt Gingrich, you know, who now writes books and goes on Fox News all the time. Thank you, Newt Gingrich. Mike, you want to jump in on this? We got a few more minutes. Dr. Krupa?
Yeah, sure. Just listening to the fascinating discussion. I think I'll take away a couple of points in terms of, you know, first of all, I think the level of atrophy of the American consciousness, I think, can be summed up in the lack of reaction or the lack of a proper January 6th, so to say, moment when Speaker Johnson first became Speaker back in October, I think. And in his first speech, I don't know if you gentlemen recall, but in the first sentence, he says, my priority will be Israel. I mean, where were the pitchforks? you should have burned that place down literally after words like that, right? I mean, can you imagine transporting General Washington back in time in a time machine and just putting him in the chamber right there and letting some guy talk about, a pipsqueak country in the Middle East, saying that's going to be my priority as a Speaker of the United States House of Representatives. So, you know, there has to be a reaction to things like that. If there's going to be any continuity of any sensible American tradition in the future, that's one thing. The second thing I would point out, I think, is both parties. The stupid party and the evil party have their own favorite country, so to say. So the Democrats are stupid on Ukraine and the Republicans are stupid on Israel, but they're both stupid on China, right? In terms of let's bring wokeness, let's bring democracy to China, let's foment a color revolution by way of Taiwan. And I think it's important a lot of people who claim to be experts and are talking on the mainstream media, CNN and all of them, when speaking about China, I don't think they have any clue what they're talking about. And as was just pointed out here by Dr. Scheuer, I mean, the amount of people, I have a friend who actually lived in Taiwan for the better part of last year, and he says that there is no natural sort of feeling that we need to go to war with Mother China and Taiwan. It's not there. There are differences, obviously, but nobody is thinking in terms of, you know, how do we lay it into Beijing? How do we bring the national spec to power? Nobody is thinking in those unrealistic terms. So I think, it's like Abraham Lincoln said, you know, that the only thing that could really destroy the United States is the Americans themselves. So looking at it internally, before you go out into the world, even if you decide to go out into the world, and if you decide that is a rational thing to do, there's so much to be cleared up in the United States. And you have to begin with that. I'm sorry, not with any disrespect to the noble institution, but currently the pigsty that you have in Congress with people running around and saying, yeah, you know, my priority is a foreign country. And oh, by the way, I took a check from AIPAC in the last election cycle, but yes, don't worry about yes. That has nothing to do with it, right? So,
well, you know, my take, and I'll let Ed go last, my take on Taiwan is, look, you know, it's a democratic kind of country. The cuisine is nice. People go there. They tour. There's people in our country that have relatives there. But I don't think that China is going to make a major smackdown because the chips are there. OK. And you know what? You'll just upset the people. They'll hate you more if you attack them. Yeah, you could saber rattle a little bit here and there. But, you know, all in all, they're still Chinese. Dr. Hoagland, go ahead.
Well, you're right. And people forget what. This is the majority of the Chinese military. What are they used for? They're used to control and subjugate their own people. All right. Mm-hmm. Do they think we're going to invade China? I mean, as Dr. Shore pointed out, you know, do you think you take 100,000 troops and you're going to invade China? Okay. Or do you think you're going to stop them from going to Taiwan? No, China, it would be suicide for them to do that on so many different fronts. But we have so many people, as the crowd here has pointed out, in Congress who have a half a brain or less than half a brain, who don't think strategically. And so they're continually played like fools, okay? Continually played like fools. But a great discussion on these two different events from Ukraine, Russia, and China. And I think American people need to start to ask their leaders in the White House and in Congress to actually start to think instead of just playing tiddlywinks. Back to you, sir.
If I could just
All right,
jump
so
in.
I'm going to close with this. We got a couple of minutes. We're going to go to the close, but I'm going to close with this, which I always say with Mike on Two Mike's podcast, and we say it on the National Security Hour. It's all about bread and circus. And if these people don't get off their ass and they know more about their sports team, their quarterback, the pitcher, the catcher, you know, third baseman, whoever, sports, Netflix, the movie, you know, it's hocus pocus, man. This is it. You know, this is where we are. You could laugh all you want. You can go cheer the games. You could spend the money on Netflix. Who supports Barack Obama? Okay. You could support all the cable channels, all the freaks. And look what you get out of it. You get Harvey Weinsteins and Epsteins and Maxwells and so on. And our country's being decimated. You really have to spend a little bit of time, come back to Washington. Yeah, you can see the cherry blossoms. They're beautiful. And the Japanese are going to give us 200 more trees because they're digging up the trees that were put there years ago. Yeah, there's, you know, it's a beautiful city. It's very dangerous. So when you come, really have, you know, look behind your head every 5 minutes because the gangbangers, it's the highest crime now. It's trying to beat Chicago and Greensboro, North Carolina. Okay. So with that, I want to close it up, Ed. I want to thank you. I want to thank our guest today, Dr. Michael Krupa, live in Poland, Dr. Ed Hoagland, who is an undisclosed location, Dr. Michael Scheuer in the Valley, and myself, Colonel Mike in the Northern Valley. But I want to thank everybody for coming on. And it's really great that you guys all joined for the conversation. I want to thank you for joining us on the mission. The National Security Hour is the tip of the spear in the epic battle to defend the United States of America. By the way, if you listen to the opening of the show, that's Ed Hoagland, and that's great music. We're Liberty and Justice for All. We're signing off, and we'll see you next week. Thank you.